TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore with you today. Another game, another terrible defensive performance last night for the Wolves. Dane, they've allowed 150 first quarter points in the last four games.
I mean, is that even that much off par of what they're doing in the other quarters? Second halves, I guess, have been
second
pretty
halves
good.
Have been good because they've come back. Like, they've been
Isn't
down.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. And it's been the second unit that's done a lot of the damage in terms of coming back, but they've dug some really bad holes.
That's like all year, too. I remember, like, it was right before Tibbs got fired against Boston, so it was the very beginning of January.
On the road trip?
Yeah, and they were, like, down by 20-something, and they cut the lead all the way down, and it was, like, 4 or 6 or something like that, and that's oddly been, like, a part of this team's identity this year is that they dig these huge holes.
So the strangest part about that is that of the teams that they played over the last four games, which was the LA Clippers, the Warriors, the Sixers, and then last night when...
Do you remember who they played?
Last the Blazers. Night, the Blazers, yeah. That's just how bad this has gotten. But last night when the Blazers were in town, like, the Warriors are the most potent offense. And I mean, they have so much talent.
Right.
And the Wolves gave up 32 points in the first quarter of that game. By far the best showing out of those four games, by far. Like, it was 42 against the Clippers, 38 against the Blazers and the Sixers, and only 32 against the Warriors. Like, that's a win.
So, and Ryan was super frustrated about that specifically post-game. And so, I guess what I just don't get is how is that mentality so consistently off? Mm-hmm. And then we know it is off, so why? And then beyond that, how much of that is on a coach and how much of that is on the players? And then I guess third, does it even matter?
Yeah, or how much of it is just on the situation as
a
whole?
What I guess
because
I
don't think that it's either A, all on Ryan, or B, all on the players. Like, I think some of it's on both sides. Like, you can... The effort is not what it needs to be for them to be defensively successful. I think that for the most part, we can say that. And Ryan wouldn't quite go that far. Like, he wouldn't call out their effort, but he said, oh, maybe it's in the realm of that, which basically means, yeah, it's kind of that. But also some of it is on Ryan, too.
Right. I think so the Atlanta Hawks are this team who's kind of been super exciting the second half of the year. And
they've been great.
A young coach by normal young standards. Lloyd Pierce is 42 years old, and
which is 10 years older than Ryan. Yeah, but it's like a young coach.
I remember going back and looking at, like, some guys when they're like their first time being a coach in the league, and like Rick Carlisle, whether it was Indiana or Detroit, whatever his first job was, he was 42 and he's like, that's the normal young coach age. But anyways, like with Lloyd Pierce, I've heard, you know, people throughout the course of the year kind of, you know, question how ready he is for the job and some of like the minutia of being a coach. But one thing you hear constantly out of Atlanta, and what you can see when you watch that team, is he has those players locked in to believing in, they're held accountable to play a certain way.
Yeah.
And when they don't, you know, they're pulled out of that. A whole bunch of different guys have played for that team, like the Timberwolves, but it really does seem that an identity has been shaped through who Lloyd Pierce is as a person.
You can tell that they're building that team culturally the right way. Now, you can, whether or not you like the moves that they've made player acquisition wise or asset acquisition wise, sure, you can listen to that. But the culture that Lloyd Pierce is instilling in Atlanta is a big deal. And I think that that's why we've seen them be so much better in the second half. They haven't been they've almost been too good in the second half. For what they want to be, they're like in a very dangerous area in the lottery standings. Right now, they've been too good in the second half, but that's a testament to the job that Lloyd Pierce has done in really instilling that culture and getting that team when there's nothing for them to play for, getting them to play as they have.
I think the operative word there is second half, as we want to compare him to Ryan.
Yeah.
Because Ryan doesn't get a second half of the season. He gets one half of the season.
And no training camp.
And no training. I mean, so on one hand, it's been bad. Yeah. I mean, the defense, as you alluded to, has been awful. They've been a bottom third of the league team when they have a really great talent. That's in ways that's somewhat unacceptable. But the Hawks were also awful at the beginning of the year. And you have all these, again, coaching question marks about Lloyd Pierce. How was he using Trae Young? Was this even smart to give him the starting job? Right. I mean, all of these.
And Trae Young could not figure out how to shoot for the first couple months of the season. I think in November he shot like 24% from three or something.
Yeah.
Which was not what people expected him to be in. I mean, it was unrealistic to expect him to come in and instantly be Steph Curry, but I didn't think anyone thought he'd be shooting below 30% that long.
And I guess that's just like at the core of this all with Ryan for me is how do we properly, you know, assess that? Because that is the biggest question right now, because it's about what's going to come. And if Ryan is not a good coaching option, that's super problematic for the future of the team. Yet here we are not really knowing exactly how much we can assess and how much we can't. I understand that some things have gone really poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the defense absolutely needs to be held accountable for not executing it and not coming out with a strong mentality in the first quarter. That too. Those things should be held accountable. But then I go to the other side too, and I mean, it's something I try and ask every one of the coaches who come in to town to visit the Wolves, and they every single one of them say how important it is to put a training camp is to put your stamp on a team and what it is you want to be doing differently than the season before.
And how often do you see interim coaches just instantly become successful?
Oh yeah, I mean
it's a very rare thing to do.
Well, and I guess I'm not even asking for success.
More like, success than we've seen.
I guess what I'm just looking for is like a change, like a difference from the team that it was under Thibodeau to the team that it was under Ryan. And the basketball suggests, at least statistically, it's not.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know how to properly weigh all that as I, you know, try and think about it for myself. Is this a good idea to have, you know, to have Ryan come back? And it's an interesting argument because you can go a lot of different ways. I mean, the players, they don't just like him. I think they do believe he's one of the better coaches that they have played for. Now, how much does a player know in that assessment? How much are they just like, well, he makes me really comfortable and I like feeling comfortable?
Well, and Carl the other night, I think it was after the Golden State game, brought up just how good. I know he also essentially gave his full vote of confidence for Ryan to get the job, but he also brought up how good of a communicator he is.
Right.
We've also heard that from Lou Alding, who's been in the league for 15 years and played for a number of different head coaches, and he's also said that Ryan's one of the top communicators. And that's one thing that you can evaluate, because it's one thing for Carl to say it, but it's another thing for a guy like Lou Alding, who doesn't have any maybe not a future with the franchise, has been around, has that experience. For him to say it, I think, means more than for Carl to say it.
Agreed.
For the franchise, it might be different, but in reality,
I would say that too, because
might be heavier.
Right. Because Kat was also always very supportive of Thibodeau.
I don't know that I've heard Kat be not supportive of somebody.
Ever.
Like, ever.
Yeah.
Because he is supportive of Wiggins. He is supportive of every single player in that locker room. He's never said a bad word about a coach. Like, I've not heard him ever say a negative word about someone.
I do think he's aware that his words carry weight, though. And he knows that when he says that about Ryan, that's going to catch on.
Oh,
and people are going to hear that. So, like, it does mean something. And I do believe that Carl loves Ryan and does like what's transpired with him. But again, I don't know if even the star player, the future of your franchise, I don't know how much his opinion should factor in. It should factor in, but it's got to come down to what is going to be best for the long, long term of this
team. How much does the caliber of that star weigh into how much his importance matters? Because, like, if Carl were LeBron, it would matter more. If Carl were Andrew Wiggins, it matters less.
Right.
Like, that's a real thing. I'm curious where Carl is in that.
So I'm pretty bullish on Kat as a player and ascending really into, I think, with the proper infrastructure, he can be a top five player in the NBA.
Sure.
I do think he's up there.
I don't know if it's top five for me. It's top 10. Definitely.
Sure.
I'm not quite as strongly feeling about that. But it's hard not to feel the way that you feel after the recent stretch of games we've seen. I know over like the past four or five games, like something's been off with him. He just
totally
he hasn't had the same touch on his shot. I don't know what it is. And guys in the NBA go through slumps like that all the time.
It's kind of weird that it was at home though, right?
Yeah, it was a really strange, and it was shots that he normally makes. Like someone tweeted yesterday, because Carl got off to a good start. He hit a step back three in the corner, and then hit like a floater and had 5 quick points. Like Carl might go for 50 tonight, and then you look up, he's 5 of 21.
Right.
Like he's just, something's been off about him, and I'm curious if it's just the end of the season trying to fight through it, or if he kind of hit a wall or something, or maybe.
Yeah, I think there is some of that. I think there's an element of fatigue. Not to totally make excuses for him. It's been a longer than an 82 game season.
Yes.
And I think, too, part of it is the Wolves could just go completely bonkers and run completely through Cat and post him up 25 times a game, and his numbers would be better and better.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that. And because once he gets in a role in those situations, you think about that Indiana game where he had 23 in the first quarter. I mean, there's an element of unstoppableness to him. They've tried to, and Ryan has tried to find a little bit more of a balance in playing with a little bit more pace and not having it be so hyper Cat focused.
And which, when you are eliminated from the playoffs and you really don't have things to play for, and you are a young coach with some younger players that are going to be around, now is the time to experiment and see what works. So that's absolutely the right move.
Oh yeah, totally. And I do think that's been a weird thing for Ryan, who came into this situation and he was like, okay, number one, what I want to do is compete. I want to, you know, try and push for the playoffs, and competing is very important to me.
And compete to keep the job.
Yes.
Like that's a very real thing.
And I think
it's not just wanting to make the playoffs, which absolutely was the case. It was wanting to make the playoffs and have the interim tag removed.
And then I think he also wanted to, as any coach should, start playing basketball in the way that he thinks is the best way to play basketball. And he is the quote-unquote more new age type of guy. And he said to us countless times, I want to play faster. I want to shoot more threes. I want to defend in a way that is in the more in line with how the more modern teams do it. He wanted to do all those things, but in the name of competition, that was number one on the list. He wasn't necessarily able to do that because playing through Cat slows you down.
Mm-hmm.
Playing through Cat, particularly in a post-up sense where he is bent, where the offense has been optimized, that takes away from shooting threes.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the struggle that he's going through, is I don't know how to put my identity on this team and compete without having had that training camp.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to point back to. That's exactly where all of this goes, is, well, when do you do that? You do that in September during training camp.
Mm-hmm.
That's when all these coaches are able to really put their fingerprints on the way their team plays and the way the roster plays and the line of thinking that all of these guys, that it eventually becomes second nature to them. And I think he talked about three-point defense the other day, the difference between the way he wants to defend the three and the way that Tibbs did. And it's a very difficult thing for guys that are conditioned to do it one way to just suddenly change. Like that doesn't happen without a three-week training camp.
Okay, but here's my thing, though. It's also been 37 games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could have been better.
Oh, absolutely, it could have been better. It just never was going to be perfect.
It was never going to be perfect, but the distance between what I think is a reasonable expectation where it is quite a gap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the last four games. The last four teams have shot 64 for 133 from three. It's 48% in a four-game stretch.
It almost is like fake.
That's bonkers.
It's every time when we're at the games, we have the box score ticker next to us, and I swear every single time I look at it, particularly in the first half, the opponent's shooting over 50% from three on volume.
Yeah, like the Sixers started off like 7 of 10 or something like that. Like it's crazy just how well these teams get off to starts from shooting deep. It's unbelievable.
And now I think there are different things that are at fault here. I think that specifically, and when you talk about the breakdowns that lead to corner threes, it's so much about how you're defending the point of attack. And the Wolves have this weird balance where they have one guy on the whole roster who's good at defending the point of attack, and that's Josh Okogie.
Yeah.
But he's not always going to be the guy on the ball. So So then when it's anyone else, you have these breakdowns, which lead to a short roll, which lead to a kick out to the corner. And I think the Portland game is actually a good example of that. It's like, all right, well, we're just gonna have Josh on Damian Lillard.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they roll with that. But then you have the trickle-down effect of that is, okay, now Tyus Jones is guarding 6'8" Rodney Hood,
yep,
who's just going to post him up and go at him that way. Or when Hood's out of the game, Tyus is going to need to go and chase around Seth Curry, who's going to bomb threes. There's this multi-level problem that starts at the start of the possession that I don't think they have the personnel to be able to do it.
I will say that the Wolves PA announcer, Sean Parker,
yeah,
got really good at saying Curry 3 points over the past couple weeks because it just kept happening and happening and happening. Seth, Steph twice, like
Dell.
It could have happened for all I know. I mean, it was nothing but Curry 3-pointers, it's felt like, over the past couple weeks at Target Center. It's really been hilarious.
And it really is, that's an issue that's not going to go away.
And, well, I mean,
it's just going to be more and more threes as in the future.
Like, there is a solid chance that tomorrow night the Minnesota Timberwolves become the first ever team in the history of the NBA to allow 1,000 3-pointers in a season. Milwaukee is currently has allowed 996, and they don't play again until Thursday. The Wolves are currently at 984. So what we've seen the past four nights, if Denver replicates that, the Wolves are going to allow 1,000 3-pointers.
So Milwaukee just must allow their opponents to take so many more.
Milwaukee has allowed their opponents to take over 200 more 3-pointers than the Wolves' opponents. Milwaukee, not to get super number oriented, but Milwaukee has allowed the most 3-pointers made, but they've allowed the most 3-point attempts. They're almost at 2,800 3-point attempts against them this year. The Wolves are just under 2,600.
There is a difference in the type of 3-pointers, you know, that you allow, and
that's absolutely why the percentage of mm-hmm. 3-pointers made against the Bucks is so much better than that against the Wolves.
Right. I'm so curious for next year how that is going to be different and how much having both Covington and Okogie can stymie some of that.
Yeah.
And putting in a new system.
It really cannot get worse.
Would you, like, how bad are the Wolves going to be at defense next year?
They'll be better. I don't know if saying how bad is the right way to go.
How good?
There you go. Positive, Dan. I think they can be around an average defensive team. Because I do think when Carl is playing well offensively, he plays better defensively. Like, mm-hmm. I think he's taken a step on the defensive end of the floor. He's never going to be a great defender. He's never going to be Rudy Gobert defensively. Like, that's just, it is what it is, right?
Agreed.
But a healthy Robert Covington doesn't solve everything, but it helps a lot of things. It makes it a lot better. If Derrick
Rose makes Cat a lot better.
Yes. Well, it makes everybody a lot better.
Right.
Because it gives you that guy that really just can fill all of the holes that they have. No Taj Gibson might hurt.
Mm-hmm.
If Derrick Rose isn't back, that probably helps a little bit. I think that the point guard situation is a giant question mark right now, both on today's team and next year's team. I don't think that we have any idea who any of the point guards next year are going to be, because I think it's...
And that's huge for the defense, as we're talking about the point of attack.
Yes, exactly. It's tough to evaluate how good or bad they'll be defensively mm-hmm. when you don't know who's going to be the starting point guard next year. Derrick Rose is unrestricted. Jared Bayless is unrestricted. Jeff Teague's got that $19 million option. He's probably going to accept it, but mm-hmm. trading him is a realistic thing.
I guess I just wonder, like, I think it's pretty safe to say that Robert Covington's, like, definitely a top 10 defender in the whole NBA.
Oh, without question. I
maybe five.
Yeah, I think you would be very hard pressed to find someone that wants to argue that with you.
And so it's just interesting that, like, so, and then look at the other side of it. Cat's a top 10 offensive player in the NBA.
Yes.
And what we've seen is since he's been in the league, the Wolves have found a way to be a top 10 offense.
Naturally.
And it's interesting how that doesn't necessarily translate to the defensive end
mm-hmm.
because we're like, oh, well, even if Covington's back healthy and he's a top 5 or 10 defender in the league, like, I don't know. I think even you're like, they're an average defensive league. That seems a little like optimistic. You know what I'm saying?
It's a bit optimistic, but offensively you get to choose how to attack teams.
And yeah.
Defensively, you don't get to choose how you are attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there have been numbers, like when Kawhi was on the Spurs, There were often times when the Spurs defense was technically better without him on the floor because teams would get him switched off and then isolate him away from the ball. So really, you start playing 4-on-4 and you just eliminate. Yeah, one of your offensive players is eliminated, but if you do it correctly, it's not someone. It's someone that you're okay with not playing with. So
it's
to
like
say, sitting out.
It's like the defensive functionality of a double team.
Yes, exactly.
Like you're removing him from
so
the equation.
You're so you're essentially playing 4-on-4, and you're okay with that because their best defender is just out of the picture.
I think that's how it
can be kind of tough for that to translate. Oh, we've got a top five defensive player, but we're not good defensively. That's
and particularly
okay
when
way.
It's not a rim defender.
Yes.
Because like Gobert can just be in the lane.
You
can't,
you can't do that to him.
Right. Like I guess he could. You could force him to guard a stretchy big if you play five shooters, but that's really hard and rare to do. Mm-hmm. I think what the Wolves will do to counter that is pretty much no matter what, they'll just have Covington be on the point guard or like the best offensive instigator. Like if they were playing Portland last night and they had Covington, I think Covington defends Lillard.
Yeah, well, especially with CJ McCollum out. I mean, yeah. Portland was really shorthanded last night and still found a way to get it done. Granted, we don't see triple doubles from Evan Turner all the time, but hey, there it was.
I was just thinking that's just the classic
How
example
about the,
of what this defense is.
Did you catch the celebration on Portland's bench? When
I heard
that
you
tempo?
Talking about it.
They went nuts. Like, I didn't realize because it was an offensive rebound. Like right
I had
at the
no
rim.
Idea he was going for a triple
He ball. Just kind of flew in. And I knew he was close, but I kind of forgot. And like I saw him grab the rebound. I'm like, that's a weird reaction. Oh my God, that's a triple double. Like I'm like, that's a really weird reaction for an offensive rebound. And they went crazy.
He also didn't miss a shot.
Yeah, that was the night of his life.
Well, the Wolves defense will do that to you.
Yeah. they've been known to do that. So I want to get into the coaching search or I don't know if it's really even going to be a search. Like, if it's going to be Ryan, what's the right process for this offseason?
Well, I guess
that's how the answer starts.
I just feel like I feel like Ryan's like almost definitely going to be back.
I do too. I went from in mid February. I was like, it's kind of like a 50-50 chance.
Right.
I'm starting to feel like I would be stunned if it's not Ryan full time.
I would agree with that. And so then if we take that, I think what becomes then tricky is how intrigued is GM X when taking the job when they are like, well, I'm not allowed. Wait, I'm the president of basketball operations, but I can't choose the coach.
It's the like biggest decision you can make, and they don't let you do it.
Yes. And my belief is when we talk about the big picture for this team, the more important hiring is of the GM because there's just a lot of things that need to be done well.
You can't get that wrong at this point. If you get the coach wrong, it sucks, but it's kind of okay. If you get the president of basketball operations or GM wrong again, you're in real bad shape.
Yeah, and so I just guess that if it is true that by saying Ryan's a coach, that you limit your potential GM pool, like you're doing yourself a disservice in that way. I don't know. That's problematic.
Yeah.
In my eyes, because again, there's so much that needs to be done with this team. I don't know. Maybe though, on the other side of it is this new GM can help them land a really strong associate head coach, or if you want to call him defensive coordinator, someone to pair with
elite
Ryan.
Assistant.
Yes. Yeah. And an elite lead assistant too. I think that's the, you know, objective number one is nail the GM.
Would you want someone to just skip over the GM thing here for a second? Would you want someone that has prior head coaching experience as the lead assistant?
Yes. And it's gotta be a guy that you know is cool with being that role, you know, because I think
that's a very fine line.
Yeah. Isn't it just kind of like human nature to be like, well, this young guy has the job and I have all this more experience and I've been busting my butt in.
Why does he
forever.
Have the right on eye?
Yeah. And so you got to kind of find someone who can be selfless in that way. And I do think if you look around the league, there are some guys who they're content with that lead assistant type of role. I mean, there's been plenty of guys who have been offered other head coaching jobs who have opted to stay in a elite assistant role that they're really comfortable with.
Not everyone thinks they're built for it, and that's okay.
Right. And so I get that you got to find that guy.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly who that is, but the traits I'm looking for there is someone with a lot of experience that can work with Ryan, is defensive minded, and also has a more stern disposition, because as great as it is that Ryan is this really positive guy, and I think that helps a lot of particularly the younger players in the locker room, you got to be able to kind of have both sides
almost
of that coin.
Good cop, bad cop type thing.
Sure.
Where you have to be able to have someone that's going to not necessarily be old school, but Ryan is so new school where you need to balance it out a little bit.
Well, I mean, again, to bring up the Lloyd Pierce thing, like those guys are held accountable for not executing.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the roster's decimated by injuries and a whole bunch of things, but guys who are consistently not executing defensively are not necessarily being held accountable for that in the Ryan Saunders era.
And part of that is because they can't sit. Like, they just don't have any other players. Like, they're out of players. They signed Mitch Creek to a 10-day contract because they just had no other players.
Right. There is some, though, with Ryan over this 4-game homestand that's just happened. You've seen Ryan lean on Anthony Tolliver more than Dario Saric, or maybe more than you would assume that balance would be, or Jared Bayless more than maybe you would like to see Tyus Jones play. So
Jared Bayless loves him some Jared Bayless.
Yeah, it's...
And Jared is a great guy, and I've really enjoyed talking to him, but there are some offensive possessions that where Jared Bayless is the only one to touch the ball, and can be maddening.
For me, it would be 35 minutes of Tyus a night at a minimum, and I would be trying to see how much Wiggins you can run at the point.
Mm-hmm.
And because what Bayless is giving you outside of the Golden State game recently hasn't necessarily been like this big positive. You're not losing that much by not playing him and leaning more heavily on Tyus or letting him take all the shots that Jared Bayless is doing. Yeah. It's not like he's knocking him down at
he can't go worse than 2 for 11, which I think that was Jared Bayless against Philadelphia on Saturday night. It's you look down at the box where you're like, this guy is just, he has been terrible tonight. And Friday night he was really good, and he was a big reason as to why they beat Golden State. But then he'll have, the games like Saturday are far more frequent than the games like Friday for him.
So, I mean, even on the other side of the ball, because, the shot selection's bad and the effectiveness with which those shots go in is worse.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is Bayless is an example defensively of what I think is an epidemic with the group, and that's where they don't believe it's ever their fault.
Yeah.
And, I'm sorry, sometimes it is.
It's got to be someone's fault.
Yeah, well, and it's same thing goes to Carl. It's like, sometimes, you did foul him. You did foul him. And sometimes Josh Okogie, you got back cut or whoever it is. And it's like most of the time when an easy bucket happens by the opponent, there is someone you can point to or something you can point to that this went wrong. And I don't think this group does a good job of acknowledging that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And how much of the just lack of communication lays into lack of accountability? Like, are those two things intertwined? Because that's what everyone on this team points to, whether it's Ryan, whether it's the guys in the locker room. Everyone says, at least on the first unit, because the second unit for some reason recently has had it figured out. Like, they've gotten it recently. I don't have a finger on it as to why, but they've been better. But everyone's been pointing to, well, we don't communicate well enough on defense. How much of that do you think is intertwined with the whole no one's held accountable type thing?
Yeah, I mean, well, because you could just be like, hey, you didn't communicate on these three straight possessions, like, you're out. But as you pointed out, it's hard to be like, well, all right, we'll take out Andrew Wiggins and play Mitch Creek or something like that. You know,
he seemed like a really nice guy, but
he did. I think I described him on Twitter as a jolly fellow. He just was very, very excited to be here. But
should have been mate. He's Australian.
Mate, yes. Come Dang on. It. Yeah, I messed that up.
That is an error in your judgment.
I don't know. I mean, it's a problem, and it's a reason that we're concerned about how the roster can be put together, given all the contracts and how you can improve the starting lineup. Starting lineup needs to improve, or mm-hmm. the the main guys in your rotation need to improve. But another like negative externality of this financial crunch is it's going to be really hard to fill up spots 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 on the roster, you know?
With serviceable NBA guys. Like, you can go out and just get anybody for your 8, 9, and 10 spots, but guys that can actually play costs money that the Wolves are probably not going to have.
And it's like, Keita, of course, he's had, like, flashes like that, and Josh is good sometimes, too, but both of them, a lot of the time, aren't. And if you're relying on filling up two of those 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 spots with your first and second round pick this year, you're just going to have a lot of guys who haven't really been through it.
Yeah.
Haven't communicated at an NBA level, haven't defended at an NBA level. And I don't that's the crux of it. It's like, well, what's the cheapest way to, you know, fill up our roster with interesting pieces? Draft them. You know? And but they need more.
Yeah.
And it's the hill I'm on right now when I think about looking at this offseason is I've got to a point where one of the three big contracts that are bad need to be moved. And I think Andrew and Gorgie are exceedingly difficult to do, and maybe we can get into those. But I just Teague's moving Teague after he opts into that contract makes a lot of sense to me because it will be able to free up some space to be able to both, in an ideal world, both shore up your starting lineup and give you some more flexibility at the end of the roster.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that's going to cost to get off of Jeff Teague, but there are teams.
I don't think it'll be that much.
I really don't either.
Like, Jeff Teague didn't have a good year. I think everyone in the world that has watched him this year can agree that he had a very forgettable season. But there are teams that would be worse off than having Jeff Teague start at point guard for them.
Totally. I mean, he can
off
be
the bench at point guard for them.
When he's healthy and, like, in his optimal mindset, like, he's a good player who I could see being in the playoffs next year helping a playoff team. I could see that. I just, given the infrastructure of this team and everything that's transpired and his allegiances to Jimmy and just a whole, he's attached to something that didn't work. And you give the pinching of the salary cap that he brings, it just, it's moving more and more towards a no-brainer to me that that needs to be seriously looked at as a way to free up some space.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea that hasn't really been talked about, mostly because his contract's not that bad because it does expire after next season, where Gorgie's isn't like that, and Andrew's certainly isn't like that. So that's why it's just not as common of a thought, because they probably, I don't know what they would have to attach to get off of him, but I can't imagine it's more than a two. I cannot imagine a team needing a one to take on Jeff Teague for
a year. And I think it depends on what money, other money you take back in it. Like, I do think if you were just like, we want to just dump Jeff and get totally off the 19, that might require your first round pick.
Sure.
Going with him. That would be my guess, at least. But you can take someone else back who's making $9 million or something like that. Now you have $10 million in more flexibility. Whatever. I just think that that one makes a lot more sense to me, because then the next most kind of logical or easy step to take would be Gorgie, because there's just less time. There's just 2 years left on the deal. But I do think, and I mean, we should give him credit for having played really well over these past couple weeks.
He was awesome last night.
So he's never gone. I mean, given his skill set, will never be worth the $16, $17 million he is. But if you optimize the type of player that he has been playing as and just be like, let's find a way where we can get 1,200 good minutes out of Gorgie Jang next year as the backup center, that's worth something. I don't know. You want to call that five? You want to call that six? It's not zero.
No, and probably seven, eight.
Maybe, yeah. So it's like, let's find, you know, let's find a way to do that. And maybe in a really good world and in a matchup, it makes sense. You could play him and Kat next to each other again for a short stint, just so you're getting something out of that. Because when he's out of the rotation, I mean, he was out of the rotation and literally bringing nothing. I mean, that's totally problematic. I think there's a world where you can get something out of him that makes it less of a need, given what the cost would be to get off of him, to move him. And then Andrew is just this whole another level, given the quantity of years and dollars.
Yeah.
That I don't know. That's the
difficult one to forecast, because you're looking at getting multiple teams involved. What are you going to take back? What's it going to take? That's the Wiggins deal is a very difficult one to forecast what a trade would look like.
And you know what? This team needs, like, on a really simple level, in a vacuum, is a big wing who can create and defend. Like, if you could find that
they
guy.
They need what everyone thought Andrew Wiggins was going to be.
Even 60% of it.
Yeah.
Like, that would help some. Like, I was talking to people I sit next to at the game yesterday. I was like, man, Rodney Hood, free agent at the end of the season. He goes, big wing, can shoot some. He'll give you this. Maybe it's not in a totally a start, like a 35-minute a game role, but that would be nice. You know what? There shouldn't be that much of a difference between Rodney Hood and Andrew Wiggins.
I had a similar conversation with the people that I sat next to at the game right. last night. Oddly enough, because Rodney Hood had a great first quarter, mm-hmm. and I turned to the person I was sitting next to, and I go, would Rodney Hood be the second best player on the Wolves right now? And he probably would be.
He looked good last night.
Yeah, if last night's Rodney Hood was on the Wolves, he would be their second best player.
Andrew's big. Mm-hmm. And I'm also of the mind that I think it would be interesting next year to play Covington at small ball four a lot.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, you need some size on the wing. Like, you can't play Covington at the four and then have a Kogi at the three and Derrick Rose at the two.
No.
You're way too small. You need to have a 6'8" wing.
Yeah.
And that could be Andrew. And again, so I think if we look through that lens and we're like, all right, we found a Rodney Hood level type player in Andrew Wiggins. Yeah, that's not worth the $27-28 million. No. But like Gorgie, it becomes a half sunk cost, mm-hmm. you know? And that just seems for now, you know, cross the bridge of moving on from Gorgie in another year or Wiggins in another couple of years. But it's just because it's impossible to get rid of all three of them without totally, I don't even know if it's like you could trade enough picks to do all that.
I don't know that you could.
So you need to find a path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. And for me, that starts with Teague.
Yeah.
And I just, once that player option is picked up, that's what I'm thinking about is places that he can play. And you canvas the league and say, who will take Jeff Teague if we attach a second round pick to him?
Yeah. That'll
and
be
maybe Kedah or something, like, I don't know.
Some asset that sweetens the pot for the team that would be taking mm-hmm. him. And I don't think Jeff Teague is that bad of a thing to take on. Like, yes, his contract's not good, but
if he was a free agent this summer, what do you think he'd get?
I think he would get 325.
I would say that'd probably be low end. I mean, not much more. I thought 330 came to my mind, which is okay. essentially
it's,
the same
yeah,
thing.
It's not that
maybe
big
the
of a
mid
difference.
Level. So like 27.
Sure.
Because more teams will be able to do that. But yeah, so that's a half sunk. I mean, it's a half sunk.
Yeah.
What we too often look at it as like, Teague's killing us. Why don't we just play Tyus? You know? And.
Well, I think part of that is that there's Tyus has a connection to this place. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of fans like Tyus, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. And there's also an unknown with Tyus because we don't know what he totally is.
So, and I mean, not that you don't know this, but like last year, I mean, it statistically and on the floor totally popped.
Yeah.
That Tyus with the starters when he was in place of Jeff Teague. It was like,
yeah,
this
wasn't
works.
The three-man lineup of him, Carl, and Wiggins through the roof?
Something ridiculous. I mean, there's, so yes, there's totally like this hometown bias, but there was also watching the game and in the numbers, you're like, this kind of works. Mm-hmm. It really looks like it works. So, you know, there's some of that, but Ryan was there for that. And what I've been thinking with this, like playing Bayless, or I was kind of through the whole time, like not totally leaning all the way in on Tyus. I'm like, I wonder how much Ryan believes in those numbers.
Yeah.
Or believes in that too. And
that's an interesting thought.
Right? Like, those numbers, there's no way Tyus is actually as good as those numbers suggest. And maybe it was...
Well, yeah, I mean, those numbers would suggest like a Hall of Fame point guard, Dane.
Yeah, and like, I also am of the mind... I remember just like writing about it a lot last year where it was... Like, the Wolves were clicking when T got hurt and Tyus came in. Like, they were all... like. Things were already going.
They kind
going.
Of hit their stride.
Yeah, they kind of hit their stride and was like, oh, they didn't lose this beat with Tyus. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you play an easy team. I mean, his big game was against when he like dunked on LeBron and like the Cavs were totally decimated. They played Victor Oladipo-less Pacers team. They played the Suns twice without Devin Booker. Like, it wasn't against like awesome teams.
Yeah.
So maybe Ryan isn't even wrong for being like, okay, guys, this isn't it. But it has me thinking, you know, when he does sit down in the room with the new GM, I don't know if Ryan would be like, yeah, we should just roll with Tyus and that be our point guard.
I don't think that. I think Tyus is definitely a very, very, I think he's a very good backup.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you need someone else as a starter.
But, okay, agreed. If you're trying to, like, actually, like, make a move. But I think you're not there. Given the contracts, you're just not in this spot where you're like, all right, let's totally figure out the point guard position. Like, you got to sacrifice
somewhere.
Yeah,
that makes sense, too.
You got to sacrifice somewhere. And I think if you can be like, we're struggling financially at the other positions, let's do Tyus at $6 million a year at point guard, yeah, and that makes up for a little bit of it.
Yeah.
And you hope he can exceed your expectations, even Ryan's expectations. If the money was different and it was like we could find a way to bring in some interesting $12, $13 million a year point guard, say Darren Collison or something like that, yeah, I would say go do that. That's going to make the team better. Like, the Wolves are better with Darren Collison than Tyus Jones next year.
Yes, absolutely.
At point guard.
No question about it.
But that, I don't think that's possible, particularly if you've already
sacrificing
money elsewhere.
It's not possible.
So that's why I'm just kind of like, whatever. Let's just lock Tyus in for like $425.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe next year he's your starter. And maybe 2 years after that, when you've got and you've been able to get off of Gorgie or Wiggins or whatever, like, money is loosened up and you can bring in another really good point guard,
or maybe
move him back to the bench,
or maybe something happens and he blossoms and becomes
it.
Like, that's also very possible. I think we kind of forget just how young Tyus is.
22. He's still 22.
It's not like Tyus is some 26-year-old point guard that's been around for 5 or 6 years. Like, Tyus is 22 years old.
I also think there's this element where it's like, okay, you look at this is sounds a little hyperbolic because it's the Warriors and it's Draymond Green, but it's like, the Warriors ascended to this something because they really extended a role to a guy who was interesting in small minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was given the opportunity, he elevated the rest of the group.
Yep.
Now, Tyus has been given some opportunities to do that and has definitely not done anything that approaches Draymond Green. But if you want to talk about this team actually ascending to conference finals contender in a couple years, something totally out of the box that happens where there's a guy who is earning a fourth of what his value actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Tyus Jones is an opportunity.
That's
for
how
that
these teams happen. Like, that's,
yes,
that's how the Warriors became what they are today, because Steph Curry did that.
Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry was signed to a 4-year, $44 million deal.
Yes.
And obviously the cap spiked at the very right time for them. And
neither
of
us are, this is not a Tyus Jones to Draymond Green or Steph Curry comparison. I know what you're saying.
The situation.
Yeah. Where it was just like, all right, we signed you for X amount of dollars and you actually just proved to be worth double that.
Yeah.
You know, or in Steph's case, like 6 times more than it.
Like 100 times more.
It just, you do need to have those type of shots. And
yeah,
and that's the same reason why, like, in free agency, I'm really interested in them pursuing a Nerlens Noel, a Kelly Oubre, a guy who you could just be like, you're still young and interesting. Like, we don't know. Like, maybe we sign you for a reasonable amount and you're like, turn into a really good starting caliber player. Like, those, when your team is screwed financially, those are the shots you have to take.
Yes, that's how you have to dig your way out of the hole. I do like the Kelly Oubre thought, though.
I don't know how much he'll get, but it's, you know, there's options.
I think he'll probably get, I think he might be out of the Wolves price range, but mm-hmm, I would like that experiment a lot.
That's what just sucks, that the price range is $9 million.
Yep, that's
per year. That's the crux of it.
That's how it is here in Minneapolis, Dan.
It is,
and
it is
for the foreseeable future, it looks like. But glad we got to do this. We'll be back next week with another edition for Dane and myself. So thank you for listening. This has been Raised by Wolves.
We didn't even talk about Zion.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save